This is the Are You Screwed podcast.
Hello, sir. This is Jonathan from Sears. Do you have a moment for a survey?
I'm sorry, I do not.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
Sir, just one question, if you don't mind.
Shut up, working on.
Sir, is your refrigerator running?
Give your picks and move on. This is Adam's segment, you idiot.
I will ruin Rutgers.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
Virtual reality sex machine.
Oh.
The freshman out of Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
He's bitty bad.
Gianna.
Mike, get your picks ready.
Gianna.
I predict that I'm going to get blackout drunk at every tailgate so I don't have to watch the game.
All right. Well, let's do this thing. We are back. Rutgers is undefeated. And we have a very special co-host with us this week. Max and I talked about this. We figured it can sometimes get a little stale when it's just the two of us, or I have nothing to really talk about when Max is Wikipediaing things and I'm just trying to fill the time. So we do have a third co-host this week. And everybody, you know who he is or you're familiar with him. James Kratch has joined us, former Rutgers beat writer, now managing editor at Elite Sports New York. James, first question off the bat, were you sick of Steve Politi? Is that why you left NJ Advanced Media?
100%. You know, I mean, it's just, I mean, you look at my former colleague, Zach Rosenblatt, he went to cover the Jets to get away from Steve, you know, so yeah, no. It's kind of weird. Like, I was thinking about this, like, I never had like a farewell episode, just the way things kind of fell of the Rutgers rant. And then I always thought, hey, maybe Danny and John will bring me on their podcast, but you know, they've got NIL stuff to deal with. So here we are. Now I can finally have my send off with you guys.
And I'm this is your send off. Wow. I am so,
this is
so
my
send off.
6 months later. It's my send off.
6 months later on Rutgers, like, seventh most popular podcast. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're really moving up the ranks.
Another one now. I probably missed it. I'm sure there's like been two more since I.
I think there's like I think there's like somebody counted the other day. There's somewhere like 8, 9, 10. Somebody on the Discord, Max. I think they counted them up and left a note. There's a lot. Shockingly,
it's too many.
Too many for sure. Okay, so there's plenty to get into. James is going to stick with us. He's been kind enough to, again, be a co-host throughout the entire episode here. There's plenty to talk about. The good news or bad news, I don't know how close myself or James were paying attention to the Temple game. Max, you went down to Philly to obviously be in the booth and help out Chris Carlin, as you always do, and the crew there. Why don't we start with you? Give us your impression of Rutgers and Temple.
First, I want to say, as James was telling us before we started, that he didn't watch the game. Like, this is a perfect replacement for Mike for the episode,
yes,
right? Because Mike,
that's a good
never
point,
watched the game, so it's perfect. I've been thinking about this a lot the last couple of days. That was the worst football game I've ever been to in my life.
Wow.
It was... I've been weighing it against the Rutgers Eastern Michigan game in 2017, because that was previously the worst football game I've ever seen in my life. But Rutgers Temple this past Saturday, that was the worst football game I've ever attended in my life.
What was it like? What was it like there? I mean, give us a feel for it. I mean, was it? Did you have any fun? You had a little bit of fun.
Well, I mean, I didn't actually get a chance to hang out any tailgates or anything, but the Temple tailgating scene was actually surprisingly lively. Like, it was,
there you go.
Yeah, it was a pretty good tailgating scene, and there's a lot of Rutgers fans there. They had the thing at Xfinity Live, which I didn't get to go to. But the football itself was just like, did you watch any of it?
I was able to watch up until the middle of the third quarter. Then I had to get to work. And then, similar to James, it sounded like he was telling us prior, he caught a little bit of the radio call.
I did.
At some point, I caught the end as well, listening to Carlin and them. So yeah, I mean, it was everything that I expected it to kind of be. I don't,
come on, wait, time out. You expected 59 passing yards against Temple?
No. Okay. I should, I, I should rephrase it where I wasn't surprised at what happened. And I guess I'm trying to get over it. Like I should be willing to get over what I saw, because if you look from the big picture standpoint, and I'm curious from your vantage point now and where you get to, like, they are 3-0. Like I need to talk myself into it, which is a shame. I need to talk myself into getting excited for that game coming up at night. You know, we get games at night again, and I'm not feeling it yet. That's disappointing.
No, like, so it's funny. Coming into the year, I was kind of still had like my hat on, my beat writer hat when I left the beat. Like, I looked at the team, I was like, this is going to be one of those, like, you take a step back. I think I wrote this on ESNY. Take a step back, you take two steps forward in 2023. So look at it, this is like a 4-win team. So I thought BC was going to win handily. Was coming in, and I think one of the issues with the transfer portal and all the craziness is that we don't really know who any of the, like, we know who's on Georgia and on Alabama. We don't, any other team in the country, we don't know. These teams change overnight. And I thought BC was going to be like an 8 or 9 win team and Phil Jurkovic was going to be a first round pick. And then they don't look like they're that sort of team. So like when Rutgers beat BC, I watched the second half of that game. I was like, okay, wow, this team's a lot better than I thought it was. Wagner doesn't count. They should not be playing Wagner. They would get better game playing Piscataway High. Then this Temple game, I thought they would really roll them. I thought Temple was horrible last year. Rod Carey was a disaster. Stan Drayton's going to need some time. But, you know, they brought some guys in and they played well. The offense, just that's the issue for me. And I fully admit, like, we had a friend's wedding, so I only listened to a little bit of the radio game. Carlin, Max obviously helping out with that broadcast. You know, they're 3-0, but they're going to play Iowa this week. There's a lot of excitement, but Iowa should be favored. Then you got to play the Buckeyes. Then you got to, I believe, an open date. You should beat Indiana, but, you know, you never know. And then you go to Minnesota. I think Minnesota might be the best team in the West. So it feels a lot like last year where 3-0 could be 3-4 in the drop of a hat.
Well, the interesting thing, too, and that's the offense is obviously holding a lot of people back from getting super excited.
Oh, the offense, the offense that had 59 yards passing against Temple. That Temple can take this.
I believe Steve wrote Ash-esque. That Temple. I used to have the numbers on an index card in my wallet. Like, okay, what was the last 50, sub-100,
Wow. Temple can find this lightly recruited, I know he's Kurt Warner's son, this lightly recruited true freshman quarterback, and he goes in and he can throw for 215 yards. But we've got Evan Simon going 9 of 15 for 52 yards or whatever. Like, what? How?
You know what?
Are we still doing this?
It even bothers me more. You pointed this out, Max, during the game in our chat, too. Temple looked way faster, way more athletic, which is like, if the quarterback stuff is going to be the downfall of Rutgers, like, they should still be more athletic than Temple and have better speed and be able to overcome a poor quarterback system, whatever we want to call it right now. Like, and they didn't even have that. That is what actually concerns me now moving forward, because if the offense doesn't seem like it's going to get fixed, I don't know what they're going to do. And I don't, like, there's no playmakers to point to overcome these deficits.
There's no big plays. I mean, against Temple, their longest play was 29 yards. It was a direct snap to Langan, and, you know, the Red Sea parted, and he, you know, went for 30 yards. It wasn't like this, you know, broke it to the outside, got ahead of the defense. They didn't turn the corner once against Temple. Like, 59 yards. I can't. 59 yards passing against Temple.
Yeah, it's tough.
And Noah Vedrill is going to come in on his white horse eventually.
Well, I wanted to, you know, it was funny. I wanted to ask James this too, because I still listen, obviously, to the Rutgers Rant each week, mainly just to hear if Brian is wrong about kicking predictions again, but also to get a sense, because James, you've been in this situation, you kind of know certain information, and if you can read the tea leaves a little bit as a listener at times. And I think the one thing that Steve said on their episode this week, which is interesting, is, and I don't know if he was truly basing it off what Greg said in their presser, But it doesn't sound like, as of right now, sounds like Wimsett's definitely out. And I thought that Vedral was going to come in, you know, riding on the white horse, not to do much this weekend, but he was going to probably play and split time with Langan. It doesn't sound like that right now. And I guess, I don't know if that's good or bad or what they do. Is it just, are they just going to go Johnny football from the Purdue COVID year? And like, that's what you have to do this weekend.
I think there's a very good chance of that. Now, look, as I said, I'm out of the game. There's no inside information. However, I believe after the Temple game, Greg got asked about Noah and said, I don't know if that's realistic. Then I think on Monday, they said it was a game time decision. My experience as a beat writer is that post game, you sometimes get, you're talking off the cuff, your emotional game just happened. Sometimes you get the better information in the post game press conference, and then they go back, they got 2 days to kind of think about how they're going to try to play mind games with the Hawk guys. Yeah, I think you're going to see Simon. You're going to see a lot of Langan. I will say this. Austin Alberici, I think it's his fifth year now, was a walk-on under Ash at Demers. They love that kid. He's a really good athlete. I mean, he was a guy who, before he walked on at Rutgers, was going to go to a D3 school in the NESCAC. I forget which one. Was going to play football, was going to run track. Really smart kid. I don't know if he's got the size to hold up, but it would not let me put it this way. It would not shock me if they, given all the quarterback uses they've done, if that kid got on the field against Iowa, because they know he's not going to do something stupid. You know, even if it's just to hand the ball off or something, they know he's not going to do something stupid. And I think that goes a long way sometimes with Rutgers. Like, if they trust a kid to protect the football, which is everything they focus on. Like, look, so I'm not predicting Austin Alberici is going to play. I'm just saying I know they value that kid. And it's funny, in 2019, when Art went, you know, decided red shirt and McCarter left, there was a moment where I'm pretty sure I interviewed Alberici, like, after a practice, because it was like, you might play in a Big Ten game. Like, all the guy left is Johnny. It's just funny how it kind of circles back to this.
Where else? You're not hearing Austin Alberici talk on any other Rutgers podcast. I guarantee you that.
I still got the fastball in situational spot.
Yeah. You know what, Max? And everybody, this is what a fair amount of people are talking about. And it was big in the Discord in a funny way. Again, if you haven't joined the Rutgers Sports Outsider Discord, again, our plug every week, go ahead. There's a link in our Twitter bar. You can go and join it. And it was the whole lip reading stuff that's going on right now between what was Greg Schiano yelling or berating or politely telling offensive coordinator Sean Gleason what to do when they were, it was 10-7. They were on that drive, I believe, where they eventually wound up missing the field goal. I kind of want to think that this is just an offensive coordinator issue, because deep down I want to be like, the talent can't be this bad. Like, they can't keep missing year in and year out. Like, it is year three, and I kind of expect it. Like, everybody finds a half decent quarterback. What is with this school that they can't find a half decent quarterback to just take them over a tiny hump? Am I like crazy for thinking that, Max?
It can't just be the quarterback. Like, if you put the EJ Warner on Rutgers, he would throw 58 yards. He would do the same thing. I don't know how. James, like, how?
So
why?
How is 59 yards
against Temple possible?
I would say it's not, but I was there the day they threw one pass yard against Indiana.
One zero
Campanelli.
You know, I like, Nunez is a great guy, but I'll never forget, like, being in that press conference. So, like, we brought up, you know, like, one passing yard. He goes, and then, like, two questions later, like, he answered it, you know, very great. Nunzio was great in that situation. It was really a powerful spot. And he was like, then I saw him, like, shake his head and mutter himself, like, one pass yard. Like, he just was like, he couldn't even wrap his head around it. No, like, look, I think Gavin Wimsatt's going to be a very good quarterback. Doesn't look like he's actually ready for it yet. He's not ready for it yet, it seems, so far, based on what is around him. I think the offensive line still has some issues. And look, I think going into the year, even back during spring ball when I was still on the beat, you lose Bo, you lose Pacheco, like, where are the playmakers coming from? You know, like, there's no Cruikshank, yes, but like you're still looking for a proven wide receiver. Like Shamin Jones kind of disappeared last year. You know, Taj Harris obviously is not with the program. You know, Sean Ryan came in and he was always going to be kind of like a second or third guy. You know, Aaron Young's been out. Manung guy is a guy you can't give too much of a workload to. Just on and on. You know, the young guys, as I said, like I think that Rutgers fans is a great start, but they have to realize that this is still a program that's not quite ready necessarily to make the big leap. Now, having beat BC, the math might work in their favor. They may get the 6 wins. You know, Maryland, as Indiana.
Cakewalk to Michigan, 6 wins. That's what we say. It's cakewalk.
Yeah.
It's a cakewalk to 6. They'll figure it out. I really think yeah, I mean, they're in a position right now where obviously they've got, you know, this weekend against Iowa, they get Ohio State, then they get Nebraska, which is fine. You called them a bye. I'm fine if you called Nebraska a bye.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the bye is after Nebraska. I apologize. Yeah,
no, it's just one of those things where they 4-2 is – if you say they're going to be 4-2 right now after the Nebraska game, I could be like, okay, they'll one of the Iowa-Nebraska games they might actually have a shot at. I think actually their better chance is Iowa than Nebraska, but that's something entirely different. It's just one of those things where I'm still having a tough time getting past last Saturday. Like, it's very, I'm not saying it would have been fine if they lost that game, but if they would have just played better to an acceptable point, it just, this is really hard to get over. I want to dive all in to this Saturday. Like, it's everything we wanted. I know it's not an impressive 3-0, but like, it's 7 o'clock. Under the lights, Big Ten game. They're probably going to get a decent crowd. They haven't had, like, and it's not like the Washington game, the opener. They haven't had a true Big Ten game like this since, what, 2014, 2015?
I mean, the opener against Penn State, maybe the 2015 game against Michigan State, where you had a fun atmosphere that night. But like,
right, like you only get so many opportunities to capitalize. Mm-hmm. And this is what I've always said about like the Rutgers fan base it's extremely loyal, but it's obviously extremely small. And in the 8 or 9 seasons, whatever, since Rutgers has joined the Big Ten, they've continued to miss and miss and miss on opportunities to build the fan base bigger. And at some point you only get so many of these chances. It might be unfair to say, they kind of, this feels like a weird must-win scenario. I know it's weird to say it that way, but just from the fan perspective, like we don't get these. We haven't had this moment in forever. You got to figure out a way to do it.
As crummy as this Iowa team is, it would still be by a pretty wide margin the best team Rutgers has beaten since they've been in the Big Ten, right? What even is the best win they've had since they've been in the Big Ten? Was it beating that crappy Michigan team?
Was it the Indiana weird game where that was like 49-40, like that crazy game out in Bloomington?
Was that
Indiana? I would argue their best win as a Big Ten member may have been the 2020 Michigan State COVID game.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, 2020 is a weird year.
I agree with you guys because it's what I would call like a scrapbook win. Like, even if Iowa is not that good, like, you beat Iowa, there's going to be a photo up in the Hell Center the next day of everyone celebrating. You know, same thing if you beat Nebraska, like, it's like, looks like a line drive in the boxcar. Like, no one's going to go back and be like, oh, what was Nebraska? Oh, Nebraska was a total dumpster fire. No, you beat Nebraska. You're Rutgers. You beat Nebraska. That's an accomplishment. I agree with you. Like, it's a, I go back to last year and I've never really understood it. They started 3-0. The Ohio State crowd is always bigger. But like, I remember, like, we got to the Ohio State game and it was this buzz. I mean, the Scarlet Walk was as packed as I've ever seen it. And then the totally predictable thing happened. Ohio State trounced them. And it felt like people were like, womp womp, like backed off. And then like the rest of the crowds, the rest of the season didn't have that juice. And I was kind of, you know, flummoxed by it. I was like, well, of course they're going to lose to Ohio State. Like, why are you, you know, disheartened by a loss to Ohio State? And I feel like, you know, the Iowa thing could be like that. Like, even if they lose to Iowa, they might just take all the air out of a balloon.
Well, I think it does to a certain extent, too. I mean, you ask why. I mean, they lost 19 Big Ten games at home. Like,
yes,
you know, and again, it's a small fan base to begin with. So you've got early season juice or whatever, where even this weekend, my tailgate's a lot bigger younger than usual. I have some fringe people who I went to school with who have decided I'm coming down for the Iowa game. You, at some point, Rutgers has to capitalize this. Like, it's not on the fans to keep showing up only to be either heartbroken or disappointed. You can only, right? That's the definition of insanity. And while that is what sports fans are in general, again, Rutgers has a very small pocket of that crazy diehard wackos, which is people like myself. So in order to get the fringe people, when you get these games every once in a while, you got to win them. You got to beat Purdue and beat Ohio State every once in a while at night. Like, you, that's just how this works. Otherwise, you're going to be the Illinois of the East forever, which is what they might be. But again, you've got the opportunity. I'm really trying to just talk myself into getting excited. I still can't find a way to do it.
It's weird. Like, you should be like, I don't see why you're not. Like, I have an idea as to why you're not. They're 3-0. I think you're not, because the game itself is going to be such a terrible, terrible football game. Like, that Temple Rutgers game might have been the worst game I've ever seen, but it may be topped this weekend by Rutgers and Iowa. Like, you might win this game with a field goal. You might be able to win this game.
You know what, though? And I think I'm sick and tired of people talking about the ever-changing landscape of college football. Schools like Rutgers, UCLA, USC, OU, Texas, they're ruining everything for college football. You know what we're doing? We're taking it back to true Big Ten football. And we're bringing Big Ten football back, and I would like some appreciation for that. Rutgers, Iowa is what you would have seen. This game shouldn't be available in HD. It should go back to SD, grainy. You shouldn't even have like the yard markers, nothing. Let's take it 35 years back, and everybody's got to watch that experience like it's 1985 old school Big Ten football.
Well, 1885 football. What are you talking about? 1985.
I don't know. You should watch some old tape of Big Ten football. It was pretty bad and just bruisers up front at some point.
They should lean into it. Like, I want see a swinging gate. I want to see a quick kick. Just let it all hang out. Actually, now that we talk about this, it'll end up being like 42-38.
You know, like, it's not physically possible. It's not possible for this game to be 42-38. It's not.
I can't even make a joke of what I compare that to, like the biggest upset ever. But that would be if just these two teams scored more than 20 points each. That would be amazing. But yeah. All right. I don't know. Do we have anything else to talk about in terms of actual football stuff, Max?
Worst football game I've ever seen. 59 yards.
So Adam, what's your worst first football game you've ever seen in person?
Worst football game I ever saw in person. This is the early Shiano days. I want to say it was 2002. They played a game actually against, it was another Rutgers Temple game. It was at home. It was later in the season. It was cold and rainy. And I want to say there, it was like 17-30. It was a bad, bad game. And that would have been it. I think I was only saved by the fact that I had to go to like a friend's bar mitzvah. And I think that's why we left in the third quarter. And I got spared from the rest of that. And I think they wound up losing 17-14. That was like the whole thing about it. I'm actually now I'm curious. Now I need to, of course, look it up, because so my OCD won't let me.
This is why overall, it's good to have Gratz here, because now you can look it up. Yeah, we can keep going.
Yes. Overall, Giants Cardinals week 16, 2017 season, Christmas Eve in Glendale, Arizona, Cardinals 23, Giants nothing. Just a horrible football game. I remember there was this like 10-minute long replay review to literally move the ball back 1 yard. It was the most inexplicable thing ever. And I'll just never forget, we're in the locker room after the game, and Jason Pierre-Paul didn't want to talk to the media. And like the PR guy got him to talk to the media. And he was like, I'm just doing this for the fans. I want you guys to know this. And I almost said to him, like, Jason, the absolute last place on earth I want to be right now on my Christmas Eve is in Glendale, Arizona, talking to you. Like, we'll just get through this 5-minute interview and go home and have some food. So worst game on the Rutgers beat, like everyone always says, like Ohio State in 2018, Buffalo, Wisconsin last year.
Buffalo was funny.
The thing is about those games, one of the teams is playing well. right?
Yes.
You're watching good football. So those aren't bad, bad games necessarily. Yeah.
So now I think about, like, I don't think I've ever gone to a game where it was just like just atrocious on both sides. I felt the most depressing game when my time on the beat was 2018, the Illinois game at home. Because Rutgers, you really thought Rutgers had a chance to potentially be competitive, win that game. And Illinois, like, every running back they put on the field, like, they're pulling guys out of the stands who get a carry and look like Gale Sayers. Like, 60-yard run this way, 50-yard, it was insane. They could not stop Illinois. And I remember, like, after that game, like, the following week, like, when the coordinators still did a press conference on Monday, it was like Jay Neiman basically was like, oh, I'm going to get fired. So, you know, we're just going to play out the string here. Like, he was just like, go, we got to finish this out. You know, then we're going to go move on with our lives, you know? I wish Greg sorry, doesn't ahead, let James. The assistants really talk, but, like, those coordinator press conferences in 2018 were amazing. Because you'd have Ash, and then it'd be like, you know, whatever. And then McNulty would come in and just say something hilarious. And it's, you know, everyone's scribbling furiously. And then Jay Neiman would come in. And then the worst one was 2019 when Andy Booth started doing the press conferences. And he would just, like, lie. So, like, when Nunzio got hired, I literally was like, you know what, like, we don't need to do a defensive coordinator press conference anymore because this man doesn't tell the truth. So that was the end of that.
You know, Andy Boo, a liar. Wow.
Andy no, Boo, wow. I haven't heard in a while.
I would, Boo. You know, that's probably too harsh, but it's just, he would just say, I'd be like, well, what's, like, well, how do you assess the linebacker play? He'd be like, well, you don't think the linebackers are good. And I'm like, well, that's true, but, like, you're the defensive coordinator. And then I'd have, like, people in the building being like, you don't think the linebackers are good? So
it's amazing what the media thinks.
I mean, like, they weren't, like, busting my balls for that. Like, they were literally being like, what do you mean? That, like, he's challenging you, the linebackers are bad. You watch the games. Like, we...
Andy right. Boo, by the way, made it into a couple of songs of mine because Boo.
Oh, that's just, right. Yeah.
Yeah. It made it into a couple. Yeah. It's a good name to, that worked to well. Work in there. Yeah.
By the way, 2002, I was correct. They lost 20-17, come from behind win for Temple in the pouring rain. Rutgers finished 1-11 that year. Wow. So, like I said, it's just there's probably a ton that I could choose from the late Shea era into the early.
Oh, Greg I can keep era. Going. I mean, even with Rutgers, UConn, 2008, 12-10.
What was it? The Tulane, the Tulane game was pretty bad too, if I recall.
The game they lost to Tulane. Ago.
Yeah, the one at home, right?
So 14-10, 2010. I want to say.
I just remember it being super hot. It was just those games were always.
That was
a
game where Sanu had like a 90-yard touchdown run, and they still. Okay,
so I guess that counts as good football since you're not going to see that anytime soon, right now. Yeah. All right. I think we're getting to the point where we have done the last couple of weeks where we go into our kind of new segment that has stuck around, where we go into notable alumni of the team that Rutgers is playing. So we have Iowa this week.
Do you do anything
I've done my research, Max. Okay. I assume you're going to do yours mid segment right now. James, this is where we obviously just banter, where we just are like curious. This came up for Wagner. We were like, who the hell went to Wagner? We got into a little bit of an argument and tussle over Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen apparently was a grad assistant at Wagner. So we're saying that that counts as him going to Wagner. That's like one of the most notable Wagner alums that there is. Mm-hmm. So this week we got Iowa. I usually like to go with it with a top five and then some honorable mentions. I was going to go number five. I have as, I was going to split it because they're coaches, Brett Bielema and Bob Stoops, both Iowa guys. Brett, I prefer easy to make fun of, just hysterical overall. So he was going to be my number five.
A large man. Like he's just like, it's not even like, he's just large, like
yeah, he kind of defies physics the way he's built a little bit, which is if I recall correctly, his wife was a big tweeter down there in Arkansas for a while. She got into some trouble with the fans, so if you can add some excitement that way, yeah. That's always good.
Also Brett Bielema, I would argue the runner up to Greg Schiano in the 2019 coaching search.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, we were really, that would have been, I wonder where we would have gone song direction wise, Max, if we had to go in there.
And
had,
I think it would have worked.
We had Butch Jones for a little bit.
Butch. That
Lyle, sorry.
Lyle,
yeah, the Butch thing. I don't think Butch. I think there's like an alternate universe where like both would have fallen through, and they maybe just like want to hire Butch just because there's nothing left. But I think the Brett thing was a little bit realer than, you know, I think that like we reported at the time, but like the there was like legs, because the Brett thing was like this consistent whisper, and the whole time I kept asking people like, okay, if Brett Bielema, who's won the Big Ten and gone to the Rose Bowl, like wants to talk to you, is interested in your job, like why are you not rushing to him? It was just kind of like, it was like this, like you didn't believe it, and then like it kind of got real at the end. But obviously, they made the right move and they hired Greg.
Yep. Thanks to RAD John Newman, who came through there. Four, I was gonna go. I'll go with Ashton Kutcher at four.
I knew that somewhere in the back of my head.
He always,
that's game day, right? Show. I feel like he's done game day before.
Yeah, he has. He's done game day plenty of times. Number three, I'll go Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder was a surprise to me. I had no idea that he went to Iowa. So Gene Wilder. Number two, I thought, Max, you would like this. Don Nelson. Don Nelson's an Iowa guy.
Oh.
So I threw him in there at number two, just on the basketball side of things.
The older one?
The coach.
Yeah, but there's Don Nelson. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not Donnie Nelson.
No, Don Nelson. And then number one, I'm going to go on the journalism side because James is with us tonight. Tom Brokaw. Tom Brokaw is an Iowa guy. So I feel like this is Iowa has got some very notable honorable mention. D.B. Weiss, who's a co-creator of Game of Thrones. I had on Tom Arnold is an Iowa guy.
Tom Arnold.
So, they're not, that's not terrible. That's a good list. Iowa should be proud of that list. I assume they're all like mainly Midwest people. So that's how they wound up there.
I haven't found anything else good. And there's Ashton Kutcher on the list.
James, have you been out there to Iowa for anything? Cause they did play there a couple years ago.
Yes, I was there. Iowa 2019. That was the second game of the year. So if you remember correctly,
right, that was the Korzak coming out party where they all want their fans wanted Korzak to win Special Teams Player of the Week.
Yeah, that was the Korzak coming out party. That was the game where McLean Carter got the vicious hit, the concussion, then ended his Rutgers career. That was, you know, people like thought Rutgers had a chance to win. You know, that game thrashed UMass.
I'll never forget
as Chris Ash called it, and then
I'll never forget Politi's column after the UMass game. Can McLean Carter save the Rutgers season?
Oh man, those were like
those were dark days. They're still dark. 59 passing yards against Temple.
And like the best part of that Iowa thing was the game ends, they lose 30-0. We're in the press conference room, and like Rutgers, like I'm pretty sure that was like the big like donor trip. It was like the first time Rutgers would go to Iowa. So like they bring all the big rolling donors like once a year, like on a trip to like see the facilities and go out to dinner and everything. And I'm pretty sure that was their donor trip that year. All the big wigs are out of Iowa. And they play horribly. I think they threw for like under 50 yards. And we're in a press conference room, and like not the boosters are in a press conference room, but you know, like the administrators, everything. And Army's about to knock off Michigan in the Big House in overtime. And they lost that game in double overtime. But like, I believe Army was going in to win. And this is the dichotomy of like, here's Rutgers, can't do anything. And like all the sports writers have got their phones out, myself included, as Army's about to beat Michigan in the Big House. And they know they're going there in 2 weeks.
How close were you to just yelling out at that point, say, see, this is why you run the triple option. You all need to listen to me.
It was keyed up.
giving people little elbows. Yeah, that's Jeff Monken right there. Yeah.
That's Jeff Monken. You know, this is the guy. So I remember that, and it was just – and I just remember like so very quick, you guys will enjoy this story. We're there and like we're like the hotel bar some before we got to dinner. And there's like these nice investors, and they just were totally fascinated that like people would come all the way from New Jersey to like reporters to cover Rutgers football. Like it was like we were like a foreign country. Like, oh wow, that scene in Major League. Like, we got uniforms. It's great. Like, and then we're driving down the interstate going to the stadium, and like those big like LED like, you know, Motel 6 signs you can see in the interstate, and it had, you know, go Hawkeyes beat the, you know, whatever the team they're playing that week was. Go Hawkeyes beat the Rutger.
Yeah, that's kind of what I would think most of the Big Ten, especially in the Midwest, was like. I still haven't embraced Rutgers enough. It's just another punching bag for you in football. I don't see really the big deal of it, and got you more money in the end too. I mean, what are you waiting for? You know, rival UCLA now to come on in and spark some interest in you? I don't really know. All right, so that was notable Iowa alum. Max, anything on the notable Iowa alum that stood out to you on your Wikipedia search?
I got a good Jeff Monken off here. Oh, you remember Cal Eldred, reliable right-hander for the Brewers for a long time. He went to Iowa.
Just like Bobby Higginson, no.
You don't remember Bobby Higginson or Cal Eldred? Come on.
No.
BJ Armstrong.
I don't. Luca Garza.
Oh, Luke, that's right, Luca Garza.
Is Wieskamp still there? I know that's a name that we're not like.
No, Wieskamp went to the NBA. Okay. He wasn't there this last season. He went to the NBA last year.
All right. It looks like a cool place to go out there and watch a football game.
No, Harry Callis. Harry Callis went to Iowa. He should have made your top five. That's a snub.
That is a snub. That's my bad. I didn't see him.
There's a couple guys I think you've missed.
Yeah, what do we got? Who would you be your honorable mentions or sneak in the list?
Norm Coleman, who I think is the last Republican senator from Minnesota, okay. W.P. Kinsella, you know, Field of Dreams author. Tennessee Williams, Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay, you're talking to me and Adam. We're not exactly into books and politics. Like
Jim Caldwell, one of the most underrated coaches in NFL history, you could argue.
The problem with Jim Caldwell is that he never looks like he knows what he's doing. He always has like a flummoxed look on his face. That's Jim Caldwell's problem.
Look at the guy's record. It's amazing.
But he's good. But his face always looks like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Obviously, Tom and Terry Brands. You know, so many wrestlers at Iowa, but I've always said, like, if Tom and Terry Brands were like college football coaches, like the stuff they pull would lead SportsCenter. Like, if Tom and Terry Brands coach Iowa football instead of Iowa wrestling, they would lead First Take like twice a week in the fall. Like, that's how the stuff they pull, like, they literally try to fight other coaches, and it's kind of wrestling, so it just kind of flies under the radar. It's insanity.
Wait, is it real fighting or is it like wrestling fighting? Like, I know it's not. I know it's real wrestling.
Oh no,
but is it like fake
real
wrestling?
Like, I have been at Big Ten championships, national tournaments, where I thought one of the Brands brothers was going to throw hands with another adult.
Like, that would be
over
awesome.
A blown call.
That would get me to watch wrestling.
Why have I never heard of these combative coaches before? Like, I really feel like this would make wrestling more interesting for me.
Oh, the Brands brothers are they look like each other. They're like moving, they're screaming. It's incredible. Iowa wrestling is quite the show.
Yeah, that's like religion out there.
Have you been out to Iowa?
I have not been to Carver Hawkeye. That's one of the things left on my list I'd love to do someday.
All right. Can we get to, I do actually have some overrated, underrated prepared this week, Max. I think I forgot to say that. I don't know if you got our overrated, underrated music.
I can find it, but it's somewhere here.
We can go ahead and find that. I had some things that popped into my mind.
All right. I got it.
All right, so this is overrated and underrated. This is a segment where we just say random things, and we say either they're overrated or they're underrated. Not perfectly rated. We don't do that anymore. Nothing can be perfectly rated. It's either overrated or underrated. Again,
so perfectly
overrated,
so properly rated is not allowed anymore.
Not an option anymore. Gone.
Okay.
Gone by the wayside. Gone, 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 gone. Like Lizzie, gone. So first one I had, found this is making the rounds on the internet right now. Do we think, and I don't think any of us have tried it, so we're just guessing on this one. Cooking chicken in NyQuil. Overrated or underrated?
I'll have to abstain. What is this?
So there's a new viral trend going on around TikTok, and it's people are cooking chicken in NyQuil. The FDA had to come out with a warning today, reminding people you probably shouldn't do something like this. Now, I don't know what happens, if it's good or not, or if it's underrated or overrated. So that's why I wanted to bring up cooking chicken in NyQuil. What do we think?
I'm trying to think of the taste of NyQuil. It's like a weird, sweet, medicine-y taste. Like, I don't know.
What would be
that
the
has
benefit
to be overrated.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think anytime that's too dangerous out there. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. We got to be the kids these days. That's the new challenge. I feel like the challenges are getting not only dumber and dumber, but more dangerous too. We should probably stop that trend.
Don't cook chicken in NyQuil. FDA warns about dangerous social media challenges.
See?
Yeah.
I'm making this up. Does it say why they're doing? I mean, I kind of get why they're doing it.
Even if you don't eat the chicken, inhaling the medication's vapors while cooking could cause high levels of the drugs to enter your body. It could also hurt your lungs.
All right, people listening, don't cook chicken in NyQuil. Don't cook chicken in NyQuil. Officially overrated.
Yeah.
We disavow cooking chicken in NyQuil.
Well, we don't disavow it. I mean, if you want to do it, go ahead and do it. We're not the FDA.
No, I'm disavowing it. I want nothing to do with it. The next thing I had on
here
today.
You're telling me it's at the tailgate on Saturday, so you wouldn't taste it if someone had some NyQuil chicken, if someone at the tailgate had it. you would give it a taste.
I'd give it a thought. I don't know if I would do it.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm disavowing. Okay. I had one today at work. I'm not a huge cupcake guy, but overrated or underrated, taking the bottom half of a cupcake and making it into a sandwich. Is that overrated or underrated?
With another
cupcake? You take one cupcake. You know, so the bottom half is the cake. You cut the bottom half in half, so you have a bottom cake part, icing in the middle, and cake on top.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It's a much cleaner way to eat the cupcake, I found, right? Because the cupcake is a weird dessert. You get a lot of frosting on top, so that's a big texture, and then too much cake on the bottom. This fixes that problem.
I disagree, because if you just take the bottom off and have the top and the crust, that seems cleaner to me. Because if you take off half of the bottom, then you're gonna have crumbs falling out.
Well, you gotta cut it.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, how many times do you eat you're at a kid's birthday party? Like, oh, let me just pull out this Ginsu knife here.
Now, to be fair, I did it today by just delicately pulling it apart, and it made it like it's a nice. It wasn't one of those cupcakes that was really crumbly. It held together. It was nice and moist.
Okay.
It just made a very nice cupcake sandwich. I think that's underrated.
At a kid's birthday party,
I'm going to go underrated with that. The next one I had on here, and I don't think he gets enough love, so I guess I'm going to say that he's underrated. RG3 is a broadcaster. I don't know if either of you have gotten a chance to listen to any of his calls the start of football season. He's gone viral he's turned into this PG-13 kind of funny on the whim type of guy who's got one liners. They wrote something in The Athletic, I believe, about him today.
I saw him race a bird. I saw that.
He did that. That was on the NFL show.
Yeah.
But who was the former Indiana quarterback, Penix, right? Michael Penix. So he I forgot where he transferred to.
Washington.
Right. He was doing their game last week. He was using the term big Penix energy. Like he's going in that route right now with just he was described as now he's the Bill Walton of college football.
I only heard one game that he was on. I didn't notice anything. But.
You know, I'm trying to think I'll say underrated. I've seen a little bit of him. I know I've seen him in a studio. He's good in the studio. college football needs that. I mean, look at the Notre Jason Garrett and Jack Collinsworth on the Notre Dame NBC broadcast, which is a big deal. You know, and not only is it a big deal, but like NBC has to get them to re-sign or else this is all going to fall into the ocean. Go show, like, they need more broadcast talent in college football, especially on a national level. And I think he's been good. I know he's done some NFL stuff. I like RG3's work.
You know, like, who does college football have? They have Corso. I guess people like Herb Street, though I've always kind of found him to be kind of bland. But yeah, college football doesn't really have a lot of like well-known broadcasters anymore.
Yeah.
No, and it's going to get worse because once the new media packages start, like now all of a sudden you've got like a primetime Big Ten game that on NBC that is important. You know, obviously CBS will be Nessler and Gary Danielson. You know, you have the Joe Klatt and Gus Johnson for like, but you're going to have like, you know, I find it hard to fathom that Jack Collinsworth and Jason Garrett can stay as your Notre Dame broadcast team if you're NBC. And you're trying, like, if I was Fox, I'd call Notre Dame and be like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what they're going to give you? You're Notre Dame. We'll give you the same $75 million. You can join the Big Ten or not join the Big Ten. We don't care.
By the way, some other good terms that RG3 has used this year, premature snapulation on false starts. There was a guy last week from Michigan, I believe, or he was one of the wide receivers. His name is Orgy. So he scored and he went with Orgy in the end zone. He's going out there. I kind of applaud it. He's trying. He's trying something to make that his thing. I applaud that.
I hadn't heard of any of that. That's good.
Those are all pretty good. Is there anything that you guys would like to add? That's all I had for my overrated, underrated this week. Is there anything that has happened in your lives that you think would fall into this category? Or James?
Milk. What are thoughts on milk? Like cow's milk. We drinking milk?
I'm a milk guy. I'm a milk guy.
You're still drinking the milk.
Overrated, I'll say.
Yeah. Well, Jim Harbaugh would really not be pleased with either of you two.
How much, like, will you just drink like a big tall glass of milk?
I will. I'm more of a chocolate milk guy. I like chocolate milk. No, so
well, that wasn't the question that I asked. I asked milk. Like, are you?
Yeah, I would still. I would still have no problem. Just having milk now. It depends on when. So my brother, his mother-in-law. So one of the first times we ever went over to his in-laws.
Brother seems like he's into house. Milk. Is he into milk?
No. Craig is not. Craig's not. He's got a little bit of a dairy intolerance. He's got a little bit of a dairy intolerance. Can't do that. But his mother-in-law. First time we're over there. It's probably like 8-9 years ago at this point. We go over there. We're having like, you know, like meat and potatoes, like hearty dinner. And she's got a big glass of just the whole milk on the table. And I've come to find out that she has a glass of milk with whatever she is eating for dinner. She also has like 5 Diet Cokes throughout the day. Like, I don't know if she's a big Francesa fan or anything like that, but whole milk at night, no matter what. Is for dinner. So like, if she's having fish, do you have milk with that? So I think she does though. So milk though, underrated.
What kind of milk? Underrated. Are we going 2% whole milk?
I'm going 1%. 1%. I think that's a nice balance. It's a nice balance.
I thought you would 1%. Have you would have only been like an almond milk kind of person. I wouldn't have had you.
No. I don't like almond milk. I got into that. What are the other types of? Oat milk. Yeah,
we talked
I got
about into that on for the pod once. We did.
Yeah. It's not bad. I feel like that's the one thing that's close enough in texture to milk. I like milk. I'm a milk guy.
Picture your milk?
Underrated. Play for your milk, right?
It was picture your milk.
Picture your milk. Right. Picture your milk. That was unbelievable. Oh my God, that feels like forever ago. Wow.
Oh man.
Okay. So we might as well get to it, James. There were a lot of we put it out there on the Discord and social media that you were joining us for this episode. So we figured, you know, let's throw it out there to the people, let them ask you some questions. We could obviously have some conversations off of it. I've kind of highlighted a few from there. Max, I'm sure you have a few. That we can get in. This actually was my own question, so not going at the Discord first. you're one of the few guys, I feel like, from the beat that was kind of unanimously liked by fans. I know there are probably, you have some stories of a few here and there, but did overall, what were your impressions now that you're gone from it? What were your impressions of the Rutgers fan base? Because you were very well liked.
I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think some of them, the one thing I think I did well, and I tried to, and I said this to people when I first got into beat, is I always woke up every day saying Rutgers is in the Big Ten. They deserve to be treated like a Big Ten program. They deserve to be covered in that way. They deserve to have the expectations. Now, obviously, I'm not saying go beat Ohio State tomorrow, but like they deserve to have the expectation of this is a real college football program. This is not just some sort of curiosity in Piscataway that you kind of look at every now and then. But I also think that like it was somehow just kind of fortuitous timing. It's like I got on the beat in 2018. The team was really bad. The fan base turned on, you know, the Ash era. In 2019, you know, I think that it was good, right thing for the program, but it also made, as a beat writer's life easier, that Ash getting fired four games in meant that there was never, like, the drip, drip, drip meltdown at the end. You know, like, in a way, by them firing Ash so early, it cut out a lot of the, like, kind of unsavory parts of when a coaching tenure goes wrong.
Some like, might say that it wasn't a slow drip. Some might say, or it had that slow drip, and it was the last 2 years of the Chris Ash era.
You could argue that. I've always said, like, by Ash getting fired four games in, like, there was never, like, the desire to do, like, the big, like, here's all the, like, all the people run out of the woodwork saying, well, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this stupid thing, you know, he did this wrong and that wrong. Like, it just became so singularly focused on the coaching search and Schiano's return. And I think that, you know, when you're a beat writer and Sarge, the most thing I'm most proud of in my career is those couple of weeks with Sarge and me and Politi in the foxhole every day, step by step, breaking all that news, being on top of everything. You know, there was a lot of crazy stuff that happened there. People were doubting us and they were with us. They were doubting us again. And we kind of stayed the course. We got the story. And then obviously the pandemic hits. And then from that point forward, it was kind of just happy times, you know, like, yeah, they Rutgers would have some issues and, you know, there would be some off field, discipline issues, or, you know, they'd lose games, but it never felt like it was at death the way as intense it was in 18 and 19 in the coaching search. So I think I just kind of went in it with, and I also like, I didn't go to Rutgers. I didn't have any of that, you know, like baggage, you know, like I was just kind of a fresh face. And I also think that, you know, having covered high schools for several years and covered high schools in Central Jersey, I kind of knew some of the athletes, you know, like I had experience covering Rutgers wrestling. So I think maybe people saw me as more of a friendlier face because maybe I'd covered their kids or I had covered, you know, the athletes that were on the teams at Rutgers now. But I think more and large, just the subject matter. I mean, I just happened to be there in a totally fascinating period of Rutgers history, and just did my best to serve as a conduit to the fans. And I hope people feel that I did a good job.
And the film reviews were awesome. I think that was a big reason why people also,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We're loving you from the start. Max, what did you see from
the Corsac film? The Corsac film review, which should have won all sorts of awards, which was actually after that Iowa game that we were talking about before.
After we got screwed out of Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week.
This might be a hard question to answer, but what is the most memorable or best or funniest email or DM or something that you got from a Rutgers fan during your time? Anything you that stands out?
Yes. I think when I did the 90s, the midseason awards, I mentioned this once, I mentioned it twice. I had a breathless email sent to me like, I've been told that Greg Schiano's sons have enrolled at St. Joseph of Metuchen. He will be named the head coach on Monday. And I had to, you know, the guy back and be like, all of Greg's sons are in college. but thank you for the tip. Yeah, that was funny. I mean, I think every time someone emails me and calls me like crotch, I always make sure, you know, I'm like, you know what? I got to hand it to you. You're the first person who's ever said this. So like, kudos to you. You are incredibly witty. I never heard that one before.
I've never thought of that before.
There was some funny. Oh, the crowd. Yeah. I mean,
never made that connection funny. Before.
Yeah. That's, you know, yeah, well, told the whole world now, my little secret. Yeah, that's, no, yeah,
but that probably speaks more about me not figuring that out than true. It does about
there. You. There would be some funny ones, like, one of the strangest interactions I ever had was when they played NJIT, the time period between the deal with Chiano breaking off the first time and then them obviously reviving a deal and hiring Greg. You know, they have the protest at NJIT, you know, the late arriving protest that night. I walk into the rack and this fan comes up and is like screaming at me about how much we suck and screw Politi and screw Chiano. And then when Greg gets hired, they have the press conference. I watched the video, like the R-Vision video they cut up on social media afterward. That guy's in the front row, like grabs Greg to get a selfie. And I was just like, that guy was screaming at me and like made me physically afraid for a moment. Nothing really stands out, but yeah, all the crazy tips we got during the Chiano coaching search and how you had to kind of listen to each one because sometimes they actually were right. But the ones about, I've been told his sons are enrolled at St. Joe Metuchen. And I emailed it. And the guy just kind of emailed it back. He goes, well, I guess I got bad information.
I thought this one would be a good one. You'd like this one. In any league or sport, if you were commissioner, what would be the most important change that you would make?
If I was commissioner of college football, I would send all the conferences back to where they were within reason. There are some moves I would allow to continue. But, you know, I say it back. I would force all the rivalry games to be played, like Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Like, no, you're going to play each other. You know, this is not going to happen. And I would force USC and UCLA back to the Pac-12 too. That I feel was like the moment where college football jumped the shark. You know, Texas and Oklahoma, they're in the neighborhood in the SEC. The Big Ten, I think, lost its way with that move. I think that it's a move that they're going to regret down the road because they're either going to have to add Oregon and Washington, which is, I just think, dumb. Or USC and UCLA, especially UCLA, I think are going to be miserable in the Big Ten because that's a lot of traveling, you know. You're culturally, it's gonna be hard for those schools to recruit. It's gonna be hard for them to build fan bases. I think it's just, you know, yeah, they're gonna have some money, but they're gonna be miserable doing it.
Their closest trip's gonna be what, Nebraska? That's the.
Yeah, it's just horrible. And like, if you're Rutgers, I get it. Hey, we're gonna get all this much more $1 million, and we get to tell all our kids once a year you get to go out to LA and have fun. Yeah, sure, that's not a problem. Like, but USC having a charter everywhere to play baseball. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I think college football was better as a regionally focused sport. I think it's clearly lost its way. I mean, I've said on here before, I would go back to the old Big East days in a second. I'd be fine with that. I would totally be cool playing Syracuse, Boston College, West Virginia. I wish that Penn State would have, you know, they would have gone with that plan a long time ago. Pittsburgh, Maryland, Virginia Tech. That would have been nice. But yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think the UCLA one makes no sense now. Looking at it. And nobody even cares. Like they're getting like 5,000 people a game right now with the Rose Bowl, it looks like. It's weird.
It's bad.
Yeah. Somebody wanted to know, would you rather stand in line for 24 plus hours worse to watch a funeral procession or the Rutgers offense?
uh, I'm going to say Rutgers offense.
59 yards. You know, 59 passing yards.
I actually saw, like, I saw one, Max, so I can do 59. I will say, like, I was surprised. Like, I, too, have family from the UK, and I didn't want to ask because I know it's a sensitive touch, but the whole time I was looking at those lines, I'm like, why did they just put her in Wembley? Like, there's, like, you know, it's 2022. Like, the rules are out the window, you know? Like, just do it at Wembley. Like, get it moving, you know? Like, I was thinking about us. Like, yes, like, I know, like, President's Lion State, you know, in the Capitol, but, like, I feel like if we had that sort of demand, we would figure it
put
out
at the Big House.
Well, you know,
I feel it would fit. Okay, delayed, overrated, underrated, like state funerals. I you know what? I kind of think they're underrated. Like, if you're gonna go all out, go all out. Like, that is, I mean, that's
FedEx Field.
Well, that would be
exactly,
that would be something else.
I mean, that's why we need to build a football stadium in the District of Columbia, if for nothing more than there's a viable state funeral alternative at some point in the future.
All right, that works. Somebody else want to know?
I'm also
kind of
fascinated about, like, who I would say who gets a state funeral. Like, should, like, Buzz Aldrin get a state funeral? I mean, he stepped on the moon, you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I feel like that's the answer.
You should be allowed to vote on it. This should be a question that we vote on every, like, November, every once in a while. Like, let's put a future list together. They still got to be alive. Like, you got to put in to want to have a state funeral, and we need to vote on it.
Like almost like, you know, national historic landmarks, like a national important funeral directory, like, you know, like government funds, you know, $50 million a year in the budget goes to this. Yeah.
I'm in for that.
Write it down.
Why not? Were you ever offended that Chris Ash never followed you on Twitter?
No, I was not. I'll never forget that. Like, we're at the press conference and Politi put that, and it was funny because, like, everyone's sitting there, and, like, I think Bobby Darrow's like, he unfollowed me, and, like, Richie was like, he unfollowed me. I'm like, well, he never followed me. And Politi just died laughing, of course, fires off that tweet, and, like, people thought, like, I was offended. People are like, why would he want to follow? You've been an asshole to him. And I'm like, I don't really care that the football coach had a problem. But I will say this. When I was sitting at home and Greg Schiano followed me on Twitter, I screenshot it and I almost tweeted it. And I was like, you know what? Let's let bygones be bygones. Fresh air, a new start.
I actually got it.
I wanted to ask about the so Rutgers didn't name its starting quarterback, and it, you know, they held for however long they held the secret that Noah Vedral had this mystery injury that nobody knows what it is. And, like, so you actually, I think you were the one who broke when McLean Carter was going to be the starting quarterback back in 2019. What do you make of all this, like, coach hiding stuff, silliness, and the media members know things, but they can't tell anyone, and you have to keep it under wraps. And then, like, what do you make of the silliness in college football of, and it doesn't just happen at Rutgers, but, like, the silliness of hiding everything in college football.
You know, I think it's dumb. I get, like, in some situations, I kind of understand, like, obviously as a member of the media, like, I'm for all transparency. I can see there are some situations where I'm like, okay, I can see that there's I can understand why a coach thinks he has a competitive advantage. I might not necessarily agree with how much of a competitive advantage he has, but I can understand it. The Carter situation to me was just ridiculous. I mean, it was ridiculous for, like, many reasons. I mean, I'm sure some of it was kind of animosity towards the local media, but the thing too was that, like, everybody was saying the same thing. And it was almost like what is the value? It's like, whether Art's a quarterback or McLean Carter's quarterback, it changes nothing. You know, the biggest thing is, like, you can't tell me that UMass was sitting there only preparing for Art. And then if Rutgers had announced on Wednesday night that Carter was starting quarterback, they would have been like, all right, stop everything. We got to do all this work. Like, no, like, so in a time and a day when like Iowa was probably like all these schools have like fired football coaches at home watching film on their iPads as analysts, like there's no secrets anymore, you know, like we joked about earlier, but like I saw Shiana did not want to say who the backup quarterback would be if Wimsatt and Reginald can't play. Well, like Iowa has watched whatever film exists of Gavin Rupp and Austin Alberici already. Like they just have. They've got an army of people who break down every play. So I think it's silly. And I also think that in a way it hurts the fans because if the fans know more about their team, they can kind of get excited. And I don't think there's necessarily value from a ticket sales standpoint or an excitement standpoint if people are being asked to go to a game where they have no idea who they're going to see and what's going to happen.
Put an injury chart or official release out there.
Injury report.
Yeah, put an injury report out there. That's what it's called.
And doesn't even have to say they're an injury. Just say – and I can't believe they don't do this because
– For all the gambling that's involved now too.
But it makes them more susceptible to having issues, you know? I know, look, I think there definitely would be challenges at it. Like the NFL injury report is serious stuff. You know, if a guy is listed as doubtful and then he plays on Sunday, the NFL launches an investigation.
NFL injury reports are really serious. Like if they suspect any funny business happens, they investigate it. They in theory fine teams, you know, can punish coaches, all of that. It'd be hard for right. college. I mean, college right. football can't do anything right, so it'd be hard to do it. But like, if you don't have an injury report, you're more susceptible, especially nowadays, to the 85th scholarship player on your the backup holder getting paid off by a bookie. Like that's just the way it is. So I think that at some point they're going to realize that they're actually protecting themselves and protecting the integrity of the sport by having an injury report that just literally says questionable, doubtful. Probable. That's all they need.
But unlike the NFL, like you said, there's not going to be any kind of
right. They're not
regulatory
it,
commission. So. I mean, the NCAA.
No, there isn't. It would have to be at a conference level, and that's not going to happen because the conferences are their members, and the crazy football coaches don't want it.
Yep, exactly. A couple more real quick, and then or one more, then I want to get to one big thing that I saw on your Twitter, which is why I was really interested in having you on. Yeah. Somebody want to know your go-to Wawa order.
You know, I grew up in Morris County. I've been to Wawa maybe like 5 or 6 times in my life, so I hate to disappoint you guys, but I have no go-to Wawa order.
Yeah, that's fine. I think Wawa overrated as well too. It's gone downhill ever since they went to the whole gas station thing.
I live in South Jersey as a kid. I like Wawa. Wawa's properly rated.
Yeah,
like I can go to Wawa if I need something to eat, and it's right there. But it's not a place I fixate on.
Yeah. Okay. This. This is the big thing I wanted to get to before we probably wrap on up because we've gone long enough. But you put a very interesting tweet out. You are about to get married soon. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. You
came up with a very interesting idea. So I want to give you the floor right now and give us your grand idea when it comes to weddings.
Yeah, so I think if you've ever been married or you're going through a wedding, you kind of learn that the seating chart is a tricky situation. You know, you got, where are people going to sit? Family dynamics, people are beefing, people want to be together, blah, blah, blah. The placement on the floor, who's closest to the DJ, who's on the outer edge. So I had this idea. I pitched it. The pitch was rejected, understandably so. Like, what if you had like a draft lottery at the cocktail hour for the seating chart? And like, you got to have some parameters. Like obviously, like you can't put your parents into the draft lottery. Like that probably wouldn't go over well. And maybe you seat the wedding party. But after that, just was this way. Actually, I had this idea and I couldn't really. I was like, what if we had like a raffle or like a silent auction during cocktail hour? And my friend's like, well, what are we going to silent auction off? And I was like, looking around, I'm like, well, I got the Pikel bobblehead. Like, maybe someone would want that. Like, I don't know. And then, besides, like, and obviously, this would be clear. Like, it wouldn't be like money for us. Like, it'd be for charity. Like, I had this kind of concept in my head of like, could we do something cool? Two charities are important to us.
You know, at first I was like, well, let's auction off like a, you get to give a toast. And I was like, that seems like a really bad idea.
Because I like that.
You know, or something like that. Or like, let's auction off, you know, we'll pay for your hotel that night or something. I don't know, something silly like that. And then I got to this idea of like, all right, so you had like this cocktail party draft lottery. So basically the way and how it would work is you'd seat your parents, depending on what you want to do, you'd seat the wedding party. Obviously you'd seat yourself, sweetheart table, whatever. Everybody else would just get put on ping pong balls, thrown into the hopper. And for charity, you could buy extra ping pong balls like the NBA draft where the worst teams get more ping pong balls. The great better your odds. And you'd put couples on one ping pong ball, like they would be together on a ping pong ball. And it would really work if you had like, I don't know, like 170 people coming. So you're going to have 17 tables of 10, you know, or something like that. So like even numbers would make it easier. And you crank the balls, you pull one out. So, you know, James and Martha Kratch get pulled out. My fiance and I have got 60 seconds to get eight people rounded up and form our table. And then next one out. Joe and Joni Smith get pulled out. They got, okay, these are the people that, like, there's 160 people left, including them. They've got 60 seconds to pull their eight people together, go get a table. And on until the end, it'd just be like, you guys are left over.
Now the tough thing about this is when it's your wedding and you upset somebody because you put them at a table and they're not happy about it, they typically won't complain because they're like, okay, at the end of the day, it's their wedding and I kind of can't ruin the wedding. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the dynamics change when you start to involve other people and now you might cause more commotion between your guests. Do you risk something happening?
The draft is fair. You know, what do you mean? It's a fair.
I'm just trying to think out loud.
Have won the draft lottery.
I want to be clear on one thing too. I love the raffle silent auction idea. I would love silent auctions and for toasts. That's a great idea. That is a fantastic idea. We should be right. I wish I would thought of that. You should do that for your wedding.
I think it was tabled, and I hope I never have. I don't plan to ever have a chance to revisit these ideas.
You'll do it at your next one. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
do it the next one. Good. But no, the draft lottery just kind of spoke to me because my basic thought was I was like, is there some way to like gamify the wedding experience?
The answer is no. No, there is not.
The answer is no. The answer is that, you know, there's hundreds of years of civilization and history about weddings for a reason. This is, you're not special. You're not unique. You're not going to crack some code. This is how you got to do a wedding.
I do appreciate the effort, though. I do. I like the thought that you put into this. And I know you got outvoted and my vote means nothing, but I approve it. And I definitely approve of the toast item. I'm all in. So. All right. Well, that was wedding talk again. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I don't know if anything will top probably your viewing pleasure of Rutgers, Iowa coming up, but the wedding might.
It might.
There's a chance. Max, do you have anything else before we end with gambling tonight?
59 passing yards against Temple.
Stuck in your head, isn't it?
59 passing yards. Against
Temple. I have nothing else. I
mean, the 1 yard was like at least against a Big Ten team. It was against a pretty decent Indiana team. All right. 59 yards against Temple.
We should be nice too, James, since we asked you questions. Is there any one question that you want to ask either to Max or I and turn the tables, go reporter on us right now?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm good. You know, I mean, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was fun to kind of jump back into the Rutgers world for a little bit. I'm always watching, you know, always keeping my eye out. It's been a little hectic around here, obviously. You know, new job, you try to build the SNY up and also, you know, get ready for a wedding. And then, you know, kind of the benefits of my new life is after the wedding, I'm going to Hawaii for 2 weeks. So it's crazy. You know, I this time last year, I think we were breaking down the Delaware game, and now I'm like going to go to Hawaii for 2 whole weeks during football season. But nice change of pace, but always glad to, as I said on Twitter when I left, was at the NJ.com for 10 years, 10 wonderful years, and the Rutgers years were definitely the best years.
Sometimes the grass is greener. Hawaii sounds a little bit better than a film review. So
Rutgers, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Nebraska.
All right, Max, let's go ahead and finish up with some gambling this weekend.
We're getting towards the end of September already. We are about 2 weeks away from the end of September. Rutgers is 3-0. The college football season moves forward. It's week 4 in the league where they play for no pay.
Something.
Not really. It doesn't count. All right, Rutgers and Iowa this Saturday night at Corporate Name Stadium, 7 p.m.? 7:30?
Yeah, 7 p.m.
7 p.m.? I don't know what time the game is. Hold on. Is it 7 p.m.?
Yeah, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. All right, 7 p.m.
You could also lower your music a little bit again, too. Loud. Did it again this week. That's a little loud. I don't know if James thinks it's loud. I would like a third opinion.
How's that?
A tiny bit loud.
How's that? Good?
Yeah, okay. I'll settle for that.
Okay. Rutgers is a 7.5-point underdog? Yeah. 7.5-point underdog. James, go to you first. What do you got?
Sounds like a good number to me. I am going to say the Iowa Hawkeyes winning 15-7. I like a safety there to get to push Iowa over the number.
I think we're going to have more punts than points in this game. I think that both Rutgers and Iowa will throw for fewer than 50 yards. I think it's going to top the worst game that I saw last week and be the worst game I've ever seen. I'm going to go Iowa 8 and Rutgers nothing. That's 2 field goals and a safety. 8-0.
All right. So last week, I found a way to get back into the zone and bring the gambling picks back. There's no need to stop the mojo. We need to keep things rolling. So I'll give you a couple of other picks first before I get to Rutgers and Iowa. So let's start with the team that we got on last week. And if you remember, last week's theme was all about Queen Elizabeth. So I'm going to go themes when I do gambling right now. This week's theme is food and our good pal, Danny. So Maryland and Michigan. Michigan, 17-point favorites heading into this weekend. Crab cakes and caviar sniffers. That's what this game does, Max. And while the RU Screw has the avocado scale, Jim Harbaugh has the milk scale. And Danny might go through 5 avocados in a week, but he's never going to be a real man and go through 5 gallons of milk in a week because he'd poop a lot. He's kind of got a dairy problem at times. And after playing 8 quarterbacks versus UConn, of course, Harbaugh is milking his starting quarterback decision with Cade McNamara out due to injury. Last week, I told you take Maryland 2.5 over SMU, and they came through. I'm sticking with the Terps again. I like them plus 17 against Michigan. Now, on to Virginia and Syracuse, the Orange 9.5-point favorites at home. The Orange, that's the food theme, are coming off an insanely wild last-second win over Purdue. For those that missed it, Boilermakers took a lead under a minute to go. They were as reckless and negligent as Jim Boeheim behind the wheel of a car with some unsportsmanlike penalties that set up Syracuse's march to victory. Things are going good on and off the field right now for the Orange. Lately, it came out today, actually, their notable booster, Adam Weitzman, will offer $1 million per year to 1 5-star football player and 1 5-star basketball player to represent his company. It's a little NIL there for you. Now, Virginia State food is country ham. That's a dish that's not going to be served at Weitzman's Rosh Hashanah dinner this Sunday. I think UVA leaves the dome with a salty taste in their mouth like one of Danny's dates on a Friday night. Cuse covers the 9.5. I'm not done yet. Stop laughing, Max. All right. It's time. Stop laughing. For Rutgers and Iowa. Rutgers has lost 19 19 Big Ten home games in a row. 19. It's been over 4 years since we last saw a Big Ten home win. J-Rod was just beginning. Megan Harry just got engaged. Now J-Rod is no more. Megan's killed the queen. Friends, it's time for one more thing no one actually cares about to die this weekend, and that's the Big Ten home losing streak. This is about our pride. It's about our corn bragging rights are on the line. And there are many ways to utilize corn, by the way, this weekend at your tailgates, like corn on the cob, salsa, or creamed, like one of Danny's dates on a Saturday night. And while that sounds like a good time to him, to many of us, it leaves a lasting impression of horror, which is what many expect to watch this Saturday. Anyway, it won't be pretty, and it might be horrifying to most. But Rutgers is going to cover, and they are going to win. Rutgers 12, Iowa 10.
Wow.
Jay, you like your send-off now for this is everything that you dreamed about?
Everything I dreamed about.
Oh, man.
Right, yeah, I got nothing else after that.
I think I'm done. I think that was it was creamed corn. That was
cream corn. All right, so I guess that'll do it for us this week. Everybody enjoy Rutgers and Iowa. I'll be in the Scarlet Lot with the RV this weekend. Feel free to shoot me a message in the Discord. You come on by, say hello. Max, you're gonna be at the tailgate for a little bit.
Yeah, what time are you getting there?
I think 1:30 is the official start time. I'll probably neither am I. I got the kids got a nap and whatnot. We are bringing her nice. For the tailgate, so we'll probably be there around 3 o'clock or so. Yeah. And then I get to stay for the game, so I weaseled my way into that. So very nice. Proud of myself. Nice. So yeah, James, thank you very much for doing this.
My pleasure,
appreciate
guys.
Having a third co-host here. Best of luck for everything going on at ESNY. Very pleased for you going on there. And Max, hopefully we get some TikToks this week. And you and Carl.
All right, yeah. I don't think Carlin's put one up this week yet.
No, well, what are you going to put up from last weekend? I mean, could have put up the interception.
They had pick six.
Yeah, yeah. All right, get him on that this weekend, will you? And think of something that you could do in the booth.
If he ever puts one up from this week, I did something this week.
Oh, you did
pick six, yeah.
Oh, I had an idea. When you get on those two, you know, like the gender reveal things, like the confetti things. Bring one of those, and they score a touchdown. You let that out. You know, just confetti everywhere.
I'm in.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. See you then.
All right. James, anything you want to say, or you good?
No. Thanks again. Thanks for having me, guys. It's fun. Appreciate it.
All right.
And we'll see what happens.
Okay, the players.